Hi, this is Danae King. I'm the religion and immigration reporter here at the Columbus Dispatch, and I'm here with my colleague Marty Schladen, who works in public affairs, and on the phone is Mitchell Garabedian, who is an attorney in Boston who has made a career out of defending victims of clergy sex abuse, and he was made famous by the 2015 movie Spotlight, which showed Boston Globe's investigation into priest sex abuse there in Boston. So, good morning, Mitchell. Tell me a little bit about what went on, you know, in 2001 and before, and how you really discovered everything that was going on in Boston with priest sex abuse.
Good morning, Danae. It's a matter of uncovering, revealing secrets. In 1994, a woman came to me, and I had known her prior to her coming to me, and she told me about her three children who were about ages 10, 8, and 12 years old, who nice kids. I knew them through the years, and all of a sudden, they were acting very strange. She lived in the suburbs of Boston, and one was washing his hands till they bled every day. Another was taking two-hour showers, which is really uncharacteristic, and another was being violent with his younger brothers when it was just horseplay prior to that. And I did some investigating, and it turned out that they were being put to bed every night by a priest, Father John J. Gagan, and she lived in the projects, and most of these women had fatherless families. The father was working three jobs a week, or he had problems with substance abuse, or he just wasn't there. And these women all came to me. Well, most of them came to me and said, listen, my children are acting strange too, and the common thread here was Father John J. Gagan putting them to bed every night and taking them for ice cream and taking them to social events and sexually abusing them. And that's how it all began, and it took off from there. And to this day, I've represented victims of clergy sexual abuse and 153 victims of Father John J. Gagan. And I'm only one person, so I can't imagine how many other 100 children were sexually abused by Father John J. Gagan, which is common for any pedophile. They sexually abuse as many children as they can get their hands on.
You know, in the movie where you're portrayed by Stanley Tucci, we hear from a victim, but we also hear your character talking to a Boston Globe reporter. Sounds like years after you first heard about this and kind of telling him about that cover-up. So here we'll hear that clip about you telling him.
So I pull out the 14 most damning docs and I attach them to my motion. And they prove everything, everything.
About the church, about the bishops, about law.
And it's all public. Because your motion to oppose Roger's motion is public.
Yeah, exactly. Now you're paying attention.
And so I could just walk into that courthouse right now and get those documents?
No, you cannot. Because the documents are not there.
But you just said they're public.
I know I did. But this is Boston. And the church does not want them to be found. So, they are not there.
Mitch, are you telling me that the Catholic Church removed legal documents from that courthouse?
Look, I'm not crazy. I'm not paranoid. I'm experienced. Check the docket. You'll see. They control everything.
So in that clip, we heard a little bit about the far reaches of Catholics and the diocese in Boston. So tell us a little bit about how the diocese in Boston had such control over city government.
Well, the Catholic Church in general is the richest institution in the world. And with money comes power and influence. And they were able to use their influence and power to silence victims, to silence the mother of victims. And matter of fact, canon law says when sexual abuse is looked into, those matters shall be kept silent, shall be kept secret. And so secrecy is the common thread. And that being so powerful and influential, they were able to have documents removed from files in the court, which is illegal. And those files were nowhere to be found. Those attachments indicating that cardinal law knew that Father John J. Gagan was a sexual abuser, yet cardinal law reassigned him without warning the public, were nowhere to be found in the files. And that was a linchpin in the whole matter concerning breaking open the secrecy in Boston about clergy sexual abuse. And there were so many instances of the church trying to use its influence. In the litigation itself, they were trying to bankrupt me, but that didn't matter. I was just going to do what I was going to, my work, and it had to be done. They reported me to the judge as being violating ethical rules three times during the litigation, and it took us 3.5 years to get to those secret files that's referred to by Stanley Tucci in the movie. And they wanted the judge to find me violative of ethical rules so they could report me to Board of Bar overseas and take my license to practice law away. They're sexual abusers and enable of sexual abusers, and they conduct criminal activity by sexually abusing children and allowing the sexual abuse to take place. But they're not otherwise nice people. People call me and say, well, the priest stole X amount of dollars from the church. We're surprised. And it's like, how can you be surprised? If they're sexually molesting children and allowing it to happen, do you think they're otherwise moral? You have purportedly the most moral institution in the world acting the most immorally. And they're using the facade, the guise of religion, to conduct their criminality. And they should be ashamed of themselves. You take away their robes, you take away their religion, they being priests and who sexually abuse children, and those who allowed the priests who allowed the cover-up, and they're just criminals. They belong in jail.
Mitchell, this is Marty Schladen. Is this a conclusion you've reached about everybody in the Catholic clergy, or is this some group of people in the Catholic clergy?
Well, Marty, you know, the sexual abuse is so prevalent, and it was such an open secret that clergy knew about the sexual abuse. I mean, I don't understand how could they could have not known about the sexual abuse. I have mothers who worked in rectories where priests sleep saying to the children, don't you go up to that room. Don't you go in there. I used to think there was no useful purpose for a bully, but the bully would be in the neighborhood telling children, if you get into that car with that priest, I'm going to beat the living garbage out of you, the stuffing out of you, okay? So, I mean, everybody in the community knew about the abuse. When I filed the first Gagin case, the clerk in the court said to me, it's about time somebody did something about Father Gagin. So, I mean, the common person knew, or the person who was not a priest knew, okay? The lay person knew. So why didn't all the other priests know? I find it hard to believe that it wasn't the worst-kept secret in the world. I mean, we recently had this summit, this international summit, conducted by the Pope, conducted by the Vatican, where he had to tell bishops sexual abuse is wrong. It shouldn't occur. Well, these are grown men. Don't they know that sexual abuse is wrong and it shouldn't occur? Didn't they learn during childhood when they were raised, or when they went to seminary, or when they got older? It was an awareness summit. It was just part of the cover-up. And the cover-up continues. And, you know, that applies to who knew what when. They're just covering it up. Marty, if they really had nothing to hide, they'd reveal the documents in their possession, they'd make them public, and they would show who knew what when. As I mentioned earlier, it took me 3.5 years to get those documents that was referred to and that were referred to in the movie. And they were in Boston. Now, all these dioceses and all these artists, too, should be revealing the documents in their possession so that the truth can be told, victims can try to heal, and the public be made safer.
So, after all of your work, the Boston Globe spotlight work, and then the movie, you're saying that the Boston Archdiocese is still sitting on paper?
Well, of course they are, but the rest of all the other dioceses in the world, including orders, are sitting on paper, too. Secret documents. And why is it documented? Because canon law says they have to write this information down, okay? And so it's documented. It's there around the world. The church has to face the truth. The truth is going to defeat the church, and they have to reveal the information they have, but they refuse to. They're refusing to even acknowledge the problem. Why would the Pope, again, hold an international summit just to tell priests that sexual abuse is wrong? Didn't they know that coming in? Where's the concrete action that the church is going to take? They're just playing this out in the long term. They think in terms of centuries or 200 years, and they think this will be gone, we'll blame the lawyers, and it would just be a myth.
Speaking of that, I just wanted to remind our listeners that we're talking about this topic because on Friday, March 1st, the local Diocese of Columbus released a list that they amended a few days later for a total of 36 priests they say have been, quote, credibly accused, unquote, of clergy sex abuse, and they judge that, whether the allegation is credible. So they have these 36 priests, but 22 of them are dead, and none of them are within the Ohio statute of limitations. And in addition to that, there's also, the diocese said that the last credible allegation of abuse took place in 1992, more than 25 years ago. So tell me a little bit about what you think of that, Mitchell, and just they released that list more than 16 years after they formed a board to review sexual abuse by clergy, and, you know, 6 months after every other diocese almost has released their list on the heels of the Pennsylvania investigation last September.
There's a lot there. I mean, they waited 16 years. That tells you about their motive. That tells you about their inclination for secrecy. That tells you that they want to keep the matter secret. Additionally, the Catholic Church has shown time and again historically that it can't self-police properly. It can't, you know, you're asking an entity that allowed the wholesale sexual abuse of children and still allows the wholesale sexual abuse of children to come clean, to be honest, to report the names of priests. Well, if you look closely at their list, you have to ask the diocese, what criteria did you use in releasing these names? Because if dioceses are pressed on this, and some of them are, for instance, in Buffalo, they said, here's our list. And then when they were pressed on it, they said, well, we're not going to release the names of credibly priests who were found credible with regard to sexual abuse if they passed away. So, I mean, what twists and turns, what criteria did the diocese use? Again, you're dealing with an entity that can't self-police, that can't be trusted, that is operated in secrecy, that won't release the documents, the information in the documents concerning sexual abuse. So why would you trust this list to be accurate? I mean, it's probably only a small portion of the priests who have been actually found to have credibly been abused. The church is interested in protecting itself because it wants to protect its image, because that translates into more money for the church.
That being said, you know, knowing that things like happened in Boston with, you know, a cover-up in the courts, then, you know, I mentioned the statutes of limitations here and damages, all which, you know, you and I talked before, the church lobbies for. But, you know, what can be done? What can these victims, even though they're outside of the statute of limitations, how can they pursue justice?
The victims need to transform themselves into survivors who will speak out, who will support amending statute of limitations, and who notify the public that the church has allowed this criminality to take place and been participating in the criminality. In doing so, victims empower themselves, they empower other victims to come forward and make the world a safer place for children. For instance, you mentioned something interesting about the list of perpetrating priests with regard to the diocese. Victims don't come forward till they're 40, 45 years old. It's simply because their coping mechanisms won't allow them to. So we're not seeing the victims who were abused in the 1990s or the 2000s come forward yet because they're too young. So it's a hollow statement by the diocese to say, oh, well, you know, clergy sexual abuse hasn't happened in 16 years. No one has been named credibly for the last 16 years or whenever that period was, decades ago. It really is just not credible because its victims are too young to come forward. But what is interesting is people often ask me, well, do you think the amount of children being sexually abused is being reduced? Well, if it is, it's because the public has been made aware that they have to watch their children, even when they're in the presence of a priest. Even when they're going to be alone with the priest, you have to keep an eye on that child so the child is not alone, because the priest could be a pedophile, and the supervisor of the priest will allow that sexual abuse to occur. So, you know, if there are less children being sexually abused now, it's because the public has been made aware. But there's no doubt in my mind that children are still being sexually abused by priests, simply because the church has not put in concrete action to stop it. For instance, in Haiti, I recently settled cases for 133 victims who were sexually abused by a non-priest, a layperson, at a camp, Project Pierre Saint, in Haiti. It was run by the Jesuits, Fairfield University, a Jesuit school, and Order of Malta, and Father Paul Carrier, who was also named as abuser, was a supervisor of Douglas Perlitz, who got an almost 20-year prison sentence there. Now, the point of this is that most of these children were sexually abused, over 100 of them, after 2002, when the National Catholic Conference of Bishops puts their norms in place for the safety and protection of children. So what it was by the conference was just talk and not action, because they didn't implement their plan. They only talked about it. And as a result, children are still being abused.
So speaking of talk and not action, for the past 6 months, the Columbus Diocese has promised this list. And so they finally released it a month after they announced that the Vatican had named a new bishop to come here to Columbus, and he'll start at the end of this month. And it's Bishop Robert Brennan, and he's an auxiliary bishop in the Diocese of Rockville Center in New York. I understand you've been doing some cases there. Can you briefly explain what's going on there?
Oh, I've had hundreds of cases in New York. Diocese of Rockville Center has sexual abusers from all levels of hierarchy there. And this bishop who is coming to your diocese now, to this diocese, is really just part of the problem. He's a cleanup man, just like Cardinal O'Malley was in Boston, where he was cleaning up the clergy sexual abuse crisis in Fall River, then in Massachusetts, in Florida, I believe it was the Diocese of Palm Beach, then the Archdiocese of Boston. He's just a cleanup man who's skilled in saying, we're going to sweep all of this under the rug and tell the public that everything is fine, we've cleaned everything up, don't worry about it. If you look at his track record, coming from the Diocese of Rockville Center, that's all you need to know, that he was involved in improper supervision, the negligent supervision of clergy sexual abuse there. Again, release the records, show us what this bishop knew or didn't know. I understand he's going to be the bishop now, and he was an auxiliary bishop, but as an auxiliary bishop, he was still in the position of power in the Diocese of Rockville Center as a supervisor.
Can you point to anything specific that he did to facilitate, cover up, that sort of thing in the New York Diocese?
No, I don't have that information in front of me, but you know, there's so much sexual abuse within the Diocese of Rockville Center. Let the Diocese of Rockville Center release their documents and show us this bishop knew nothing of clergy sexual abuse going on in the Diocese of Rockville Center and did not allow it to continue. You know, the damage to a child is too great. It's everlasting. It ruins that child's life, his or her life. It ruins the family's life. It ruins the lives of so many. It ruins the lives of the family and of so many, that it's incumbent upon the Catholic Church to reveal these documents, to show us that these bishops can be trusted. Otherwise, you know, it's just given the extent of clergy sexual abuse in the Diocese of Rockville Center, one has to presume that he was just part of the problem and not part of the solution.
Well, I think we're going to end there. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate your questioning. Thank you very much. Bye.
So, Danae, that was pretty interesting, wasn't it? He's pretty fired up about this.
Yeah, which I think is understandable. He's been working on this for more than 25 years, and I think it'd be easy to be outraged with all that you've seen and all the cover-ups that seem to go on within the church and outside the church.
And I suppose it is understandable that if your entire career has been fighting a big institution and, you know, you feel like what you're doing is protecting children from sexual abuse, that you're going to form some pretty strong opinions. I think something we ought to try to do, and if anybody's listening who thinks that they're, you know, qualified to do this, I'd like to have somebody on who thinks that the church is redeemable, that this situation can be fixed, and I'd like to hear those ideas too.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear a plan to maybe fix and stop this once and for all, because many people out there, I think, Marty, do think the church is redeemable and that this is kind of just a black eye on a greater organization that does a lot of good.
That a lot of people depend on.
Right. Great. Well, that being said, you can learn more about the local diocese and what's going on here in Columbus with another podcast Marty and I did with our colleague Mark Farinchek that's up now on dispatch.com. And also make sure to check out the story that printed on Sunday, March 10th, that Marty and I wrote about the institutions inside and outside the church and how they make it hard for victims to seek justice. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.